our focus is making sure that we align someone with the right mentor that can pour into that person, that is going to assist that person as they navigate this transition and they figure out what's next for them. Whether they're, you know, a transitioning service member or they're a veteran who's, you know, been out for 10 years and transitioning career fields, right? We want to help you. We're going to transition. Transition isn't just a military thing, right? You're going to transition a lot of different times and a lot of different aspects of your life. So we want to make sure we're there for them.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Kaprelian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Kaprelian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. On this episode, we have Eric Brew, who works for American Corporate Partners. That's ACP. I'm going to tell you, ACP is my favorite resource. Of all the ones that I've heard about, of all the ones that I've seen fellow service members use, ACP is it. It's where they partner transitioning service members with mentors. You're not going to want to miss this. Eric also has a very interesting transition story, so he's going to talk a little bit about mindset, psychological challenges with transition, and then we're going to get into ACP and the mechanics of how to apply and what a mentor can do for you in your transition. So stay tuned. Eric Brew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Chris. Alex, I appreciate you guys having me on, man. I'm humbled. I'm excited. Let's get a conversation going, shall we?
Shall we?
100%. This is actually a milestone because I finally have somebody from with Army experience coming on the podcast. It's been like Marine, Navy, Air Force, Marine, Navy, and it's like Department of the Navy dominated. Of course, your blood isn't pure green, and we'll get into that.
That is true. That is true.
We'll get into that. I'll let you, actually, as a matter of fact, that's how we're going to start out. So okay. To let the audience know. Well, before I do that, the reason why I'm excited to have you on, I know we've been trying to get our calendars to work out and sync up. And so for those of you listening, Eric Brew works for American Corporate Partners, my favorite nonprofit organization, yet to have a single individual that used the services provided by American Corporate Partners or ACP and say, well, it wasn't really worth it. Not at all. 100%. Everybody said it helped them succeed in their transition. And so I'm very excited to talk to you about that and what ACP does. But before we get there, Eric, I'm going to force you to talk about yourself. I want to know, where did you grow up and how did you get into the military? And explain it. And hopefully we'll get to the part where your blood isn't pure green. It's tainted.
It is. And I appreciate that. And I'll tell you, Chris, I don't mind talking about where I came from and how I got here. I will tell you that I hope that you expect some transparency and a little bit of vulnerability because my story is not fun. But let's get there. So I grew up in a small town in Michigan. I'm on the western side of the state over by Grand Rapids. I grew up, went to high school, started in college. And I learned very quickly that academia was not a place for me at that time. I learned that by my academic advisor sitting me down and telling me I was wasting my money. That's how I learned that.
Whoa.
And so I left college, thinking that I was going to, go out and conquer the world, at 19 years old. And a series of events happened, that left me in a really precarious position. I ended up homeless. In December in Michigan. And I don't know if you know anything about Michigan in December,
holy
but it's not warm. At any rate, I was, fast forward to a February timeframe. I was walking to a buddy's house, in 1996 and, trying to get to somebody's house just so I get some warmth. Car pulled up next to me. Guy asked me if I wanted a ride. I looked in, it was a, he was wearing weird looking clothes. My dad had served in the Navy. My uncle had been in the Marine Corps. I don't have a long like history, family history of military service. Both of them served before I was born, so I wasn't inundated with that life. But I had watched enough movies to know this guy was probably a recruiter. So I got in and I said, "Hey man, I'll take the ride, but I don't want to hear your spiel. Like, let's, you know, here's where I'm going." And the guy was super cool. He said, "Absolutely, let's just, you know, I just want to make sure you get you off the street, dude. It's cold out." And when we pulled up to my buddy's house, he didn't say a word. This is cold as ice. He didn't say a word. He just handed me his business card. And I got out. I went inside my buddy's house and I was sitting there on the couch. I was watching my hands shake and I was shivering. And I'm staring at this business card on this table. And I'm like, "Dude, you have watched your life tank over the last like 15 months in a way that you never saw coming. And you're not able to fix this thing. So maybe this is what you need. Maybe this is how you get things fixed." So I called the guy up and joined the Marine Corps. I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps. I didn't get to have any of the fun that I was promised. This was pre-9/11 and it was post-Desert Storm. And so there was nothing to do. I didn't even get to go on a ship. Like, it was stupid. I got to do nothing fun. And so I got out, right? I did 4 years. I got out. I served honorably. I got out early in 2000. I had gotten married at the time to my then wife and now my ex-wife. But I'd gotten married and I had a couple of kids. I was I transitioned out of the Marine Corps with no help whatsoever. I mean, there was no assistance at all in 2000. I failed miserably at most of my jobs. I held multiple jobs immediately coming out of the military. I worked construction. I worked road construction. I worked security. I worked in restaurants. I did all kinds of crap. But then 9/11 happened. And on 9/11, I went back to a Marine Corps recruiter in California, which is where I was living at the time. I walked in. I said, "Hey, I'm back. Put me back in, coach. Let's roll." And that gentleman looked at me and said, "Hey, man, we don't take quitters, pound sand." And I was like, "No, dude, I don't know if you've like seen the TV, but there's some pretty serious crap happening. So put me back in, coach. I'm ready to go. High five." And he was like, "No, we don't take quitters. Get out." So I was like, "Whatever, bro." I walked out of his office. I banged a hard left. I walked into the Army recruiter's office. I got like three words out of my mouth. And he was like, "Yes." So I joined the Army. I had been out for a little while, so I had to go like the last 4 weeks of basic training or whatever. Like, and then for the next 20 something years, I was an infantryman in the Army. I like to tell folks that I've been to all kinds of weird places and done weird things with weird dudes. So it was a heck of a career. But yeah, just shy of 25 years of being a knuckle dragon, barrel chested freedom providing grunt, man.
Nice. That's an amazing story. We didn't talk about that. I'm very humble beginnings, and yeah. Man, you've come. I mean, it's just amazing. I'm sure thinking about where you came from and where you're at today, and how that shapes an individual. Probably a lot of hard work
and a lot of blunt force trauma.
Yeah, a lot of spinal compression too.
Correct.
What made you want to get out of the military and transition?
Oof, that was a tough decision. It felt easy in the moment, but it was a really tough decision, right? I was staring down the double barrel of the sergeant major's list. I was eligible for the board for consideration, and I recognized that that's like a 7-year commitment, and I'm not a dude that's going to half step things. So I knew I was going to give it every bit of 7+ years. I was already looking at, if I got out now, I was looking at that 24, 25 year mark. I'm thinking 31, 32 years. Like, I don't know. I've already done two different branches of service. I'm been able to take men to combat at every leadership position available except for sergeant major. I don't know. I just felt like this was it. And I think, you know, you hear people talk all the time, like, "You'll know when you know, like, you'll just wake up one day and it won't be fun anymore." And that might be true for some people. I don't know that that was true for me. For me, it was taking a look at what I had left in the tank and then trying to recognize that I was at the tail end of a season and I wanted to have more left for my next season. I didn't want to step into my next season completely burnt out. I miss it, man. I love being an infantry dude. I love the camaraderie. I miss the boys. I miss hanging out with my homies. Like, I miss all that stuff, but I've got a fire in my belly in this next season, and I didn't want it extinguished before I stepped into it.
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I know, looking on my own career, and for there are numerous reasons why, I'm kind of mentally committed to transitioning and retiring somewhere around 2025, but my hat's off to those on the officer side that are 06s, because one of the things that I noticed is, it not only, like you said, taking that next pivotal step, it's not only a huge commitment, but there's a lot of, it's even more instability. Like, I keep running across 06s and E9s that they PCS sometimes once every year. Like,
yep.
And that's tough. It's tough on a family. It's tough on an individual. And then by the time that you're ready to actually retire after that, presuming that you end there, I mean, you could be an E9 at a core level command in the Army, or at a similar in the other branch of service, but now you're pushing 30, maybe 33 years. How much more gas do you have left in the tank to actually go out and explore a whole new career?
Yep.
And so it sounds like you made a decision that was largely on your own terms, with the future in mind of pursuing a second career. Is that accurate?
Second career, I don't know that I was thinking that far ahead. I'll be very, very honest with you. I was in the middle of dating a girl that I thought I was going to marry, and I am now married. So it was more looking at my family and what kind of a fire I had left in my belly to kind of like move into a new season and a marriage and being a bonus dad and all this other stuff that life is, right? Like, I'm multidimensional, Chris. Like, I'm not the box that the infantry has always had me in. There's more to me than that. And so I wanted to have that go for the next season of life. Career was a thought. But for me, it was more, hey, I'm about to start a new family, and I want to be right for that. I want to make myself right. I put in a lot of counseling time. I did a lot of things to make myself, as close to blued and zeroed as I could be.
Blued and zeroed? Oh yeah. All right. Zeroed, blued. You're talking about iron sights.
Yeah. That's iron sights. There's a lot of people that don't know about that.
I had to restart my brain here, because our whole logo is the ACOG rectangle. And so the last time I've had to use sight black on anything has been ages. Oh my goodness. So a far more holistic standpoint in making that decision, and that's good to go. Now, around what time were you looking at getting out? I mean, what year was that?
So I started my transition process mid-2019, early 2019, somewhere around there. Here's one thing I've learned, Chris, is like, when I try to make changes in my life, I jack it up. Like, that's what happens. I jack it up front, and then I try and like correct in the background, because I screwed up my transition bad, brother.
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
So, it's funny. I try to talk about this specific topic as often as I can, because it was the thing that I was missing, and that was understanding that I wasn't alone, right? That was the thing that I was missing in my transition. I thought I was just the only idiot that couldn't figure this thing out. But I went through transition. I started through transition, having not asked anyone for help, having not reached out to a single organization, having no clue who to reach out to. Just kind of like, I'm going to figure this thing out, because muscle memory says the first sergeant just figures things out, right? Like, I don't know is not a popular answer for the first sergeant to give. So you just know, right? You just figure it out. You always know. And so I figured out what I wanted to do. I was going to be an operations manager, which, hindsight being what it is, I have no idea what I was really thinking, because I didn't even know what industry I wanted to work in, right? Like, Amazon has operations managers, and so does Waffle House, right? Like,
yeah.
They're two completely different industries. It doesn't really mean anything. It's just, it's something that I think we tell ourselves a lot. I'm going to be a project manager. That doesn't, where, doing what, I'm going to go in HR. Okay. Well, that's a massive umbrella. Are you going to go into compliance? Or are you going to go into, payroll? What are you going to do? But I had this plan, and I'm making air quotes, right? I had this plan, and I left no room for life to life me. I left no room for my own azimuth to change. I left no room for any wiggle room. I made a rigid plan, which I know better than. Like I look back and I'm like, you know better than all this. Like you've done MDMP, you know better than this. But I made this really rigid plan and I put it in the perfect rear naked choke and I killed it. I killed it. 4 months to transition, 4 months to terminal leave, and I murdered everything. Everything fell apart, fell to my feet. And so I was left holding a bag, and I was left holding an empty bag that said, hey, man, you better figure out what you're going to do next because you're on the way out. And that pushed me into another pretty dark place. I won't easily forget these moments, but like I remember distinctly sitting on my couch on a Thursday evening, holding my computer and looking at the Google machine. And I remember seeing my hands start to shake, and I remember feeling this kind of short of breath. And I remember looking at Google, and I realized that it wasn't that I didn't know the answer. I didn't know the flipping question. I didn't even know what to ask. I didn't even know what to type into the search bar. And that drew me into this whirlwind and downward spiral of trying to figure out why I was the only moron that couldn't figure out how to transition. I couldn't figure out how I could have nearly 25 years of immaculate, beautiful, incredible, successful service only to drop the ball on the 5 yard line in the fourth quarter. How could I be so successful and jack it up at the end? And to be super transparent with you, that spiral ended with me on the phone with an emergency counselor from Military One Source talking me out of suicide. Because I didn't know how to go on. I couldn't imagine trying to figure this thing out. And it was all the negative self-talk and it was all the crap. And there's a whole bunch of stuff that went into that. But the fact is that woman helped me in that moment see a couple of things that I think are super important. First and foremost, it's okay not to have all the answers. And I had to give myself permission to not know. And secondly, is I'm not the only one that's struggling through transition. There are people that really struggle through this thing. This is not easy. Transition makes it sound like I'm walking from my kitchen to my living room. That's a transition through rooms. Transition is so easy. This thing isn't easy. It's not impossible, but it's not easy. There's so much more to this than just finding a job. There's an emotional standpoint. There's a physical, you know, aspect. There's a spiritual aspect. There's this thing is bigger than just, oh, go find a job. Right. And so she helped me understand that I'm not the only person going through this and I'm not a moron. Right. There's a lot that I have to offer, but what I didn't know how to do is how to figure out what my worth was outside of the uniform.
So it very closely tied to your ideas of what your self-worth was and who you were as a person. I think that's what you're kind of explaining, right? It's not just about a job. It's like a whole new identity.
Yeah.
And it's all of these underlying assumptions about who we are. It's like, well, I am my rank and I'm the senior enlisted advisor. It's not allowed for me to say that I don't know what, yeah. I don't know what the question is. And so that, and then when you strip that away, that's like severing an appendage.
Yep. Huh. I had this beautiful office that my wife decorated and it's got all these Lickies and Chewies all over the walls, right? All these accoutrements from years past and decades past. And what that has become, it used to be what that used to be, right? When I was in the service, I used to hang this stuff up in my offices and it used to be those badges of honor and those kind of like, hey, this is where I've been and this is what I've done, so that when people walk into my office, they see it and they know who they're talking to, right? And what I've loved about this transition, for me at least, is I've been able to look at this accoutrement and look at all this stuff hanging on the walls, and it has become simply a reminder of how I got to where I am. That's it. It doesn't hold any more power than that. It has value. There's value in all of this stuff. There's value in all of my stories. There's value in the things that I learned while I was in the service, but it is a season that I walked through that helped me become who I am in this season, but I'm not in that season anymore.
So tell us how you rose from the ashes on that one.
I walked into a small nonprofit here outside of Fort Benning. I threw my hands up. I looked at the young lady sitting at the front desk. Her name was Dory Pelly. And I said, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing. And she looked at me and she said, we got you. I sat down with a guy named Jeremy. He helped me figure out some coaching tips and some things about things I didn't know about, like resumes and interview skills and stuff like that. And he helped me kind of start walking through that stuff. And then I met their boss, who's the regional director, Charles Livings. And he, to this day, is a second father to me. I mean, he is one of the greatest mentors I've ever had. But Charlie sat down, and for whatever reason, he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And he built a plan to do a career skills program through this organization. It's called Still Serving Veterans. But Charlie built a CSP, which is kind of like a skill bridge, and allowed me to come and intern at Still Serving Veterans for the last 2 months now of my transition before I hit terminal leave. I'd be lying if I told you I knew how many books I'd read on veteran employment, how many articles, how many interviews I did with people and mock interviews and all this stuff that Charlie put me through to make sure that I understood more than I ever understood before about what it takes to come out of the military, transition, transform, and then become a thriving member of society, right? In the civilian employment. But he taught me all this stuff so that I could coach others, because the day I went on terminal leave, Still Serving Veterans offered me a position as their transition program manager.
Nice.
So I immediately was able to start giving back. And I'm so glad that my career went the way it did, because like I said earlier, I wanted to make sure I had fire in my belly. And I originally it was for my family, but it turned out to be, I needed fire left in my belly for my brothers and sisters. So yeah, so I started my first job outside of the military was a veteran nonprofit, helping folks understand transition and walking them through resume writing and interview skills and salary negotiation and all that good stuff.
And I'm guessing because you came from a dark place during your transition and then had people help you find clarity in what it is that you wanted to do in the future. I'm sure that, I mean, cause I'm looking and I tell everybody this, I troll their LinkedIn profile, like hashtag veterans helping veterans. I mean, that's kind of been the, not just knowing from what the brief conversations we've had, that's kind of the theme of your career. I mean, you found a new mission in helping our brothers and sisters in various different colors of cloth, but helping them get out too. And mad respect for that. I mean, you worked for Still Serving Veterans. And where did that take you?
So it was just over 2 years in. In that 2 years, I had worked really hard to build a great network of my brothers and sisters and fellow veteran advocates and just people that I built and cultivated great relationships with. One of those people, her name is Leslie Coffey, and Leslie is the vice president of military engagement at ACP, American Corporate Partners. And about 16, 17 months ago, she reached out to me and she said, "Hey, Eric, I'm building a position for ACP. Doesn't exist. We're going to build it. But I'm going to use your resume to build it because you're the only one I want to hire. It's either you or your twin." And I don't have a twin, so I felt really kind of pigeonholed at that point. I was like, well, I guess it's got to be me. But I asked her, I said, who else are you going to interview? And she said, unless you say no, I'm not interviewing anyone else. So that was super humbling. But ACP brought me on, and I got to work side by side with, I mean, dude, working with Leslie Coffey is like playing basketball with MJ every day. Or doing batting practice with Mickey Mantle. I mean, it's incredible. It's watching her work. And watching her heart for the veterans and the military spouses and transitioning service members is just incredible. So, but I came on board. She's my VP. She's the vice president of military engagement. I'm the manager of military engagement. And so together we're kind of like the 1-2 punch for outreach and for making sure that folks know about ACP and what we bring to the table and what we can do for them in their transition.
All right. Well, sweet. That brings us up to present day. So with that, I mean, like, tell us, cause some people probably don't know what ACP is. So can you give us an orientation on, the ACP's mission and the services they provide?
Absolutely. one of my favorite subjects, right? Like you're giving me these softballs. It's easy. So ACP first and foremost is a veteran nonprofit. So we're 501c3. We have a mission to connect transitioning service members, veterans, and eligible military spouses with industry professionals, mentors, right? So folks that are in industry that are standing on a landing zone you want to get to, we're going to connect you and we're going to hook you up with a year's worth of mentorship with that one individual. We ask for, you know, one phone call a month. Usually it's about an hour. So what I tell our folks is, you know, you're going to spend more time in the drive-through or, you know, standing in line at Starbucks in the course of a year than you are in your mentorship if you do the bare minimum. But it's an organization, and really we play in one sandbox, right? It's that's mentorship. We are not a staffing agency. We are not a placement agency. However, the beautiful byproduct of career coaching and mentorship is always going to be employment, right? That's going to be the thing that we're kind of looking for as an end state. It's just not our focus. Our focus is making sure that we align someone with the right mentor that can pour into that person, that is going to assist that person as they navigate this transition and they figure out what's next for them. Whether they're, you know, a transitioning service member or they're a veteran who's, you know, been out for 10 years and transitioning career fields, right? We want to help you. We're going to transition. Transition isn't just a military thing, right? You're going to transition a lot of different times and a lot of different aspects of your life. So we want to make sure we're there for them. But yeah, we match them up with someone in their career interest. And then, you know, all of our mentors are voluntary. They're volunteers, so which is kind of cool. But what I really like is, you know, I think you and I talked about this a little bit, this ACP, American Corporate Partners thing. It's not just corporate, right? It's not just corporate America. I understand what it sounds like, and we do partner. Do we partner with 120 Fortune 500, Fortune 100, even a couple of Fortune 50 companies? And the mentors come from within those companies. So, you know, there are people that work for Major League Baseball or Amazon or Nike or Campbell's or Bank of America, and the list goes on and on. And that's where 80% of our mentors come from, is those corporate partners. But we have a little over 20% of our mentors are fall under what we call our citizens program, which is law enforcement agents and teachers and healthcare professionals and DOD employees and you name it, real estate agents, entrepreneurs, these little niche fields that you really, you know, you're not going to see maybe a corporate tag attached to. But they make up about 20% of our mentors. And what's cool is there's really not an industry we don't touch. As a matter of fact, we had a protege come through who really wanted us to help him find a mentor because he wanted to start his own farm. And admittedly, that did set us on our heels a little bit. We were a little concerned at first. However, what we had in our role is we had a Bank of America mentor who was an executive and worked remote and ran his own farm. And so the same mentor who previously had mentored in the finance world for us, right, had mentored folks looking to go into finance, just pivoted in what he was doing. And now he's helping this young person figure out the logistics of starting and running a farm and what do taxes look like and all of this other stuff that, you know, I would never think of because I never ran a farm. But this person is helping them in their thriving and figuring out how to do this for themselves. And so it is a blessing to be able to watch the effect that these volunteers can have every day. I would love to pat myself on the back and break my arm, patting with the rest of my team on the back, but it really has nothing to do with the team at ACP. Don't get me wrong. Their hearts are pure. They're a great team, but the secret sauce is really the volunteer mentors that show up. And you know, we survey our mentors frequently and ask them. And one of our favorite questions to ask our mentors is, why are you doing this? Like, why are you volunteering your time? And by and large, the number one answer consistently is, I'm tired of just saying thank you.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it's that gratitude in action. They want to do something that shows our community they're thankful. Because like 86% of our mentors have never served. You don't have to be a veteran to mentor in our program. As a matter of fact, I'll be honest, I didn't want a veteran to mentor me when I came through the program. When I finally decided to go through the program and I went through ACP, I didn't want a veteran. I didn't have a civilian teaching me how to be a soldier or a Marine. I wanted a civilian. I wanted somebody that could teach me what it was like to be on that side. Best decision I ever made, because my mentorship's long over and I talk to Gwen all the time. She her favorite question to ask me is, what's your growth plan? I hate that question, but she asks it all the time. And so I've got to give it to her because she's my mentor, right? And when she asks me, what's your growth plan? I got to have it. So I got to figure out what my growth plan is. I know when she calls me on the drop of a dime or she shoots me a text, I got to have an answer for her.
Mm. Yeah. So for some individuals that don't quite understand the benefit of a mentor, and I know that I mean, you're probably one of the challenging things of transitioning, which is different today than maybe it was, maybe even 3 years, but definitely 5 to 7 years ago, is there's a plethora of resources out there. It's almost difficult to figure out, well, where am I going to invest my time and energy? And I think, and maybe you can expound on this, but a lieutenant that I know who was in my unit ended up getting partnered with, and I think this is an awesome vignette because it's gold in disguise. He had a degree in finance or accounting, and he wanted to go into the finance industry. And so he went to ACP and he got partnered, and it was unusual. He got partnered with a mentor that was based somewhere in Europe. I want to say almost Switzerland, but he was like a fund manager or on a management, I mean, like pretty impressive position, and explained to him after they had a conversation that the very job that he wanted to do was outmoded by software about 5 years prior to that. Mm-hmm. And not only told, and now sometimes the information you want to hear is like the tough information because you've been concocting in your mind, this is the thing that I think I can do. But the coaching conversations that they had after that helped him, like right off the bat, understand the corporate lexicon, the terminology. Like how many times, if you're in the military, you look at a job posting and it's like, oh my gosh, I don't even understand some of the words in this job description, let alone the systems. I mean, that's what a mentor is there to help you with, right?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, you just hit on a key piece of this, and that's a communication barrier, right? When we look at, and this is based on a study by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce back in 2016, when we look at the veteran population who exit the military, right, 200 to 250,000 service members, we learn that 86% of those folks have no idea what it is they want to do when they grow up. We know that 84% don't know how to engage with hiring managers and don't know how to network with employers. We know that 81% have no idea how to translate their military experience into that elusive language of civilianese, right? We understand, and those are the big effects of transition. We struggle with this communication thing. See, none of those four categories talk about an ability, capability, you know, grit, drive, whatever it is. You know, they don't talk about those things. It's simply communication. Mm. How do I take my years of service and what I did in the military and translate it into a language that 93% of Americans speak? And how do I say that I'm worth more and I bring more to the table than the uniform? Mm. So agree with you that we as military folks, we as transition service members, we look at these job announcements and we're like, I have no idea what the heck that means. Or we look at it and be like, yeah, I can do that. And in truth, we can't because we don't know what it means, right? The same is said for when we try to talk to our civilian counterparts about what we bring to the table. When we start talking about, you know, Ranger School and Air Assault, or we start talking about MCCC, or we start talking about, you know, these different, and employers are shaking their head like, uh-huh, with a blank stare on their face because they don't know what any of that means. And unfortunately, what we hear is it doesn't matter. Like nothing you did matters. You got to translate everything. You got to do this. It doesn't matter what you did. What you did doesn't matter. No. What you did does matter, but how you sell it and how you say it matters more.
It's like the Rosetta Stone, right? From military to civilian.
Listen, I want my brother and sister to hear me clearly. Like I do not want you to give up your veteran heritage. You are part of 7% of the country. 93% of this country have never donned a uniform. You are a part of a very small cool kids club. I don't want you to lose that. I want you to be able to walk out in the backyard at a bonfire with the boys and have an adult beverage and a cigar and talk stories and laugh and cry about the good times and the bad times. But what I want you to do is I want you to be able to wake up the next day, go into your civilian employment, and thrive as a counterpart, as a teammate with a bunch of civilians in an environment that looks nothing like the military. I don't want you to give up your hometown language. I just want you to become bilingual. That's it. We just got to become bilingual. We just got to be able to speak two languages. And we do it all the time. Believe me, as I did not speak to the commander the same way I spoke to the boys.
I hope
right?
Not.
Like, I am think bilingual. You shouldn't do that. I mean, I have. It didn't work out well. I have. those are moments of passion, right? That's what I call them. They're moments of passion.
Moments of passion.
but I know how to be bilingual because I've been doing it my whole career. I just need to adjust it now. See, that's the thing. Like we've got all the tools inside of us. We just have to figure out how to repurpose them. They're still valuable. They just need to, I need to use it for a different thing now. And so I might need to shift it up a little bit. I might need to make some tweaks. But for any one of us that have led, you know, or been on a mission outside the wire, or who have done any kind of training, like we all know that like the best plans don't survive first contact. So we figure out how to adapt and overcome. It's kind of the problem, in my opinion, with the military. The reason we don't get bigger, better, newer, cooler toys is because we consistently show that we can do more with less. We consistently prove that over and over and over again. We keep showing everybody that if you just give us the crap, we still win.
Or we get put into a position that we were never formally trained for, and we still find a way to make it happen.
Exactly.
I'm getting recruiting flashbacks.
Ugh. Yeah, right? So it's such a space to get into mentally and emotionally when you can sit back and realize that you are bringing forward incredible tools with massive weight and huge value. If you could just figure out how to make them work in the civilian world. And that's where a lot of us struggle. That's where we get the 44% of all of us service members who get out will have a second or third job inside the first year post-military service. That statistic comes because we don't land well. We don't land in the right career field. We don't land at the right culture. We don't land at the right position fit. We don't have the right salary fit. We haven't found any kind of alignment with what we need or what we bring to the table. We don't find alignment in what we want in our future. And so we just take a job. And then the ripple effect of that, though, is that our spouses who have followed us for 4 or 34 years, who we said, okay, I'm getting out. This is our forever home. We're in San Antonio. This is it. And then the job falls apart. And now we're moving to Tampa. And guess what? Just broke a promise. And we both feel it. I feel like I let you down. You feel like I let you down. Like there's all kinds of stuff that happens. Now, what about our kids who are told you're finally going to finish one school? Like you're going to be a freshman. You're going to graduate. But we got to move because the job didn't work out. There's such a ripple effect to how we go through transition. We have to treat it with respect.
And so having somebody on there that helps essentially not only translates what you did in the military and help you figure out, you know, kind of things that align with your values, your interests, and your skill set and your needs, that they essentially help you cross the gap, right?
Absolutely.
So you're not taking a left when really what you really wanted to do but didn't know it was take a right. And they're there to help you figure out that process.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what's beautiful about that too is, and I tell my teenagers all the time, right? Don't take dating advice from your friends, right? Because they're idiots too. And I don't need you taking dating advice from your friends, right? My wife and I, we don't take marriage advice from other people who have been married a year, right? Because we're all in the same season. I want my mentor to be a season or two ahead of me. I want them to have already traversed the ground that I'm in, been successful, and be on the next level. So when you're talking about transition and you're talking about career mentorship, that's the same thing. And personally, this is just, you know, I tell people all the time, I give the world's greatest advice, but a really good synonym for advice is opinion, right? I guess I've got a great opinion. But that was why I didn't want another first sergeant telling me how to like transition. I need somebody who doesn't think like me, who sees the world through a different lens and who's already traversed a lot of the ground of civilian life, right? Not necessarily the transition piece, but the civilian life. So when I want to go into nonprofit, I picked a mentor who's in nonprofit. She's been in nonprofit for as long as I've been in the military. So she's got a plethora of experience. But she's also from a completely different side of nonprofit. She works in nonprofit, but she's in philanthropy, right? She works in fundraising. That's not something you ever want Eric around. Eric is not a good fundraiser. I don't want to do that. But I do want your perspective on what it means when I bring you a problem set. And I say, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. What would you do? Because her answer is going to be different than mine, but it's going to provide me a diversity of thought.
Nice. Okay, so you got me sold. Well, you had me sold a long time ago. Okay, but let's get down to the mechanics. All right. Okay. So let's say the listener right now is like, oh yeah, okay, I'm sold. where do they start?
Okay, so we start with www.acp-usa.org. You're going to go to that website. You're going to find either the veteran or the military spouse application, and you're going to fill out that application. That application is lengthy, but it's lengthy for a reason. I need you to hear me clearly. Trust the process. Okay, so you're going to fill out the application. You're going to be as detailed as you can. It's going to ask you a whole bunch of things about what you want to do and what you're bringing to the table and some of your background stuff. Be as detailed as you can. I'm going to pause here and say, if you are one of the 86% of people who don't know what you want to do with when you grow up, I need you to tell us that. Because ACP has a ton of mentors who actually prefer to help you walk the dog and figure out your why. They help you figure out what's next. So it's not just about people who are laser focused and I want to do this and this is what I'm going to do and this is the career in the industry and I'm going to go for it. We have a ton of mentors who just want to help you figure out what's next. So when you get on that application, if you don't know, tell us. Listen, you got to be communicative. I can dig to the bottom of the rucksack that ACP holds and there are a ton of tools in there, but I have dug to the bottom and I have never found a crystal ball. So you got to tell us what you need. So you get on this application, you fill it out and you hit submit within 24 business hours. Now, I'm not a first sergeant anymore, so I don't make people work weekends. So if you fill it out on Friday, Monday is 24 business hours. All right, 24 business hours later, you're going to get an email or you may get a phone call or a text. You're going to get some kind of communication from us that says, hey, we've got your application. We want to talk. If you're expecting an email at any point throughout this process, if you expected an email from ACP or somebody at ACP and you don't get it, I need you to check your spam. The fact is we are a nonprofit. We are not just a .org website. We also use .org email addresses. And unfortunately, Yahoo's and Google's and things like that don't like us, so they kick us to spam relatively frequently. So if you're supposed to see something and you don't, move it from spam. The more times you move from spam, eventually your Google will start to recognize that you like that person and it'll let it hit your inbox the way it's supposed to. But once you hit submit, you get your email, you're going to set up a phone call. The phone call is where we're going to finalize what we're looking for. Now, when you fill out the application, the person that pulls your application is going to look at it and they're going to start formulating. They're going to go off your answers and they're going to start formulating their top 10, top 15, top 20 mentors. The people based on what you think that they already know, this person would be a great fit. They're going to kind of case in that top 10 or top 20. And then they're going to wait till they get on the phone with you because you're going to schedule a phone call. You're going to get on the phone with that person and they're going to start asking you some kind of more questions and they're going to dig a little deeper. What's cool about our process is that there's not a single bit of AI and there's no algorithm. This is legitimately an organization built by people for people to help people. So that person's going to listen to you. Then they're going to start to refine that list and they're going to go to work. Now, finding you the mentor can take anywhere from a couple of hours to several weeks. It just depends on what you're looking for. Now, this is where I want to explain when we talk about customized mentorships. First and foremost, when you are paired with a mentor, your mentor comes off the table. That person is no longer available. We only allow each mentor to have one protege at a time. So once that mentor is paired with a protege, they are off the table for the course of a year. Nobody else can have them. So you are it. You are theirs. And we do that so that you feel like you are their priority. And we also do it so that we can keep longevity of our mentors in the program, because if I take the CEO of Campbell Soup, who's one of our longest standing mentors, and I say, hey, here's 40 protégés, he's not going to last long in our program because he's got a company to run and I like his soup. So I need him to be focused, right? So we're going to pair you up with a mentor. But while we're doing that, in that process, while you're on the phone, while you're filling out your application, while you're doing this process of what we call pairing, I want you to be very clear with what you're looking for. And I'm not just talking about your industry. Industry and career fit are always going to be the first things we look for. However, we also want to know if you're more interested in hearing from a mentor with 25 years or 10 years. If you want, you know, someone who's in senior leadership or middle management. Because remember, if you're an E4 coming out of the military, you don't need a CEO mentor. That just doesn't make any sense. There's too many echelons between you two. But maybe you need a middle management mentor. So those are the types of things, right? Years of experience, industry, those are the things we're going to look for. But I also want you to say, hey, there's maybe there's an ethnicity or a gender that you're more comfortable speaking to. Tell us. We want to know that too, because this is your future, man. Like, you need to let somebody pour into you. And if you're looking at the person who's mentoring you and you don't have this initial trust, or you can't look at them and let them pour into you, you know, I'll be very honest. When I went through my process, I denied my first two mentors. They were both incredibly talented. They had long storied careers. They both were just absolutely ridiculously qualified to be my mentor, and I denied them both. And when my wife challenged me to do an internal evaluation and figure out why, the answer I came back with is they were both dudes. And I'm a barrel-chested, knuckle-dragging, freedom-providing grunt. And I'm full of bravado. And unless it's my dad, if I'm feeling sad, I'm probably not going to be transparent, and I'm probably not going to be vulnerable with another dude. But I needed that. I need to be able to be vulnerable. I need to be able to be transparent. I've got to be genuine when I'm talking to this person, because otherwise, how are they going to know what to pour into me?
Well, I think that's pretty strategic. You're looking for somebody that's everything you're not, right?
Yeah.
To serve as a counterpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also realized that I'm a huge mama's boy. My wife is my best friend. My mother-in-law is my road dog, and I would murder people over my daughters. So I said, hey, how about I get a female mentor? Best decision I ever made. Gwen is the bomb. We have cultivated an incredible friendship. But it was because I bit into and accepted the philosophy that I have to be willing to let somebody pour into me. And if I'm going to let somebody pour into me, then I've got to make it somebody I'm going to let pour into me. And if I'm going to let them pour into me, then they've got to fit a certain mold. My wife did the same thing. My wife is an African-American woman who wanted to build her own business. So she said, I want a mentor who is an entrepreneur, an African-American woman who's walked that ground. Because that brings its own unique challenges and struggles. But she wanted to be able to trust that person. Of course, she probably had a spouse that was begging her to look at all of those aspects and figure out what she needed in a mentor. But those are just a couple of examples of like, this is how serious we take this. We want you to figure out who it is you want to talk to so that we can find that person.
All right. I want to be conscious of the time that we've gotten. This is great information. I'm going to ask you one more question before I turn it over to Sis, who's got a couple of questions. But
okay.
So you get partnered with a mentor and you're going down this coaching experience, this mentorship experience, and you can use it for 12 months. What are the things that you can't do? Like, what are the rules of the road for the mentee?
Please don't ask our mentors to help you with your personal finances.
Oh, God.
Really, this is a rule we put out to our mentors as well. Please don't ask your mentor to help with your VA claim. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's stick with what this is for. Other than that, I need you to be vulnerable. I need you to realize that it's okay, and you have to give yourself permission to not have all the answers, and then to lean on that person. I also want you to recognize that if you're going into cybersecurity and you've got a great cybersecurity mentor, but now you're starting to think maybe project management or red team, blue team, I want you to understand that you can tell us that, and we'll find you a one-off phone call with another mentor in that area. If you say I'm going to be HR, and you get 2 months into your mentorship and you realize that HR is not what you want to do because, oh my gosh, I don't want to deal with that, then I need you to tell us and we'll find you a different mentor altogether. Now, I say all of that, but there comes a but here, right? None of us would go into a restaurant, order a steak, eat it down to bone and gristle, and then ask the waiter to take it back and expect them to give us a new steak. That's bad form. We know not to do that. So if you tell us at a month 11 of a 12-month mentorship that this mentorship sucks and this is a horrible pair, I love you, but that's on you. Because all you had to do was come up on the net and say so up front. You tell me at month one, month two, month three that this sucks, or this personality's not clicking, or you wanted to change career fields, dude, just tell us. I need you to over-communicate with us because we're going to over-communicate with you.
I can only imagine in the beginning, though, there's so many conversations that are happening before you're really getting paired up with a mentor that the chances are still there that they'd want to switch mentors, but at least you've had some really great initial conversations before the mentor is paired with you, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing that we do like to do is we'll do like an introductory call where we say, okay, we found this mentor. We showed the mentor your biography. We showed you the mentor's biography. Everybody's excited. Everybody wants in. Okay. Let's do an introductory call because sometimes people look really good on paper. Yes. And then you get on the phone with them. You're like, oh my God, you couldn't pay me enough to sit with that wet blanket, you know? Right. Like I couldn't listen to that voice again for another 5 minutes, like let alone 12 months. No,
yeah,
that's okay. But yes, there are plenty of opportunities for us to say, hey, can we revisit this?
Mm. And is there like a good time when somebody's transitioning? Like, is there too soon or too late to reach out to ACP? What does that look like?
I'm going to answer that in reverse chronological order. There's no such thing as too late. None. Listen, we are open to anyone who has served at least 6 months, 180 days post 9/11. So if you retired 20 years ago, you're still eligible for the program. There's no such thing as too late. The only people we don't have in this program, and we have a different program for, are pre 9/11 folks. And for that, we've got ACP AdvisorNet, which is a different program. Too soon, yes. And here's what I would like to see folks do. I would like to see you sign up 12 months before you go on terminal leave, not before your EAS or your ETS or your retirement date, but before you go on terminal leave. So 12 months prior to terminal leave. What that does is that gives you the year of mentorship of industry relevant information happening in real time. And it also puts that mentor in your corner when it comes to interviews and salary negotiation. And you can have that real time interview or that real time assistance. On top of which, if you're like me and you build and cultivate a great relationship, that mentor is going to continue to stay in touch with you afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. And you can still lean on them as you go through the integration process, because we all want to high five veterans as they get jobs. But that's when the real work begins, because integrating into a team where you might be the only veteran is, can be really difficult.
Yeah, no, I when you were talking, and I was just thinking of so many conversations I've had with multiple people that are coming into the organization that I work for, of this horrible imposter syndrome feeling, like coming in and feeling completely anxious about doing something that they feel that they might not have any experience in doing, and then the project ends and they feel okay about it, but then the anxiety really hits in again, and oh, then the horrible feelings of somebody could have done this better, and then, you know, wham bam, you feel like an imposter in the work that you're doing. I can only imagine that's some of the things that the mentors are hearing from people that are calling in as well.
Absolutely. And let's be clear. I mean, the imposter syndrome, I believe anyone that actually cares about what they do, when they first start out, they're going to face some imposter syndrome. But I think there's a unique paradigm to imposter syndrome when you're a service member coming out of service, because your identity has become the clothes you wear or the job you do. Right. And so when you take something simple, like I don't remember putting on my uniform for the last time. I don't remember, everybody talks about putting on their uniform for the last time. I don't remember it. I remember the last time I took it off. I remember standing there and unzipping my blouse and like unblousing my boots and untying my boots. And I remember taking off my jacket and I remember thinking, I never get to put this back on. I never get to strap up again. I don't get to do this again. And that's an emotional event. That's a significant emotional event. At least it was for me. Maybe I'm just a huge sissy, but like it was a significant emotional event for me. So yeah, imposter syndrome is real. We in the military, man, again, all these lickies and chewies and the badges we wear on our chest, like they identify us. They identify. We wear our name on our shirt. Like everything about what we wear identifies us. So then when you take that whole thing away, I don't know who I am anymore. And I don't know how I fit into your organization. I don't know how I do your job without a knife hand. You know what I mean? Like I don't know how I accomplish this mission without 16 privates and two staff sergeants.
And some of that can be solved probably through your coach or your mentor at ACP, but you also mentioned a great resource, and I think it's worth mentioning again, Military One Source.
Oh,
100%. It's free. It's a great organization that gives you non-medical counseling. You can get up to 12 sessions, and if there's a need to have more sessions because you have a different related event, you can get more. But there are resources out there to help you through that process. I've referred service members to it, and again, a lot of great things coming out of that. So certainly something worth mentioning again. Hey, we're getting close to the time to wrap up, and so I want to give you an opportunity to give some of your final thoughts. Are there a couple of things that you want service members to remember as they embark on their own transition and a significant, not only career change, but a lifestyle change?
Yeah, I think, Chris, the first thing I've got to make sure that people understand, and I know this has been said a couple of times, and I don't mean to beat the proverbial dead horse, but you have to give yourself permission to not have all the answers. You almost have to look yourself in the mirror and give yourself, physically say it out loud and give yourself permission to just not know. Because when you take that power of I'm acknowledging that I don't know, it gives you the power to go find the answer. So give yourself permission, look yourself in the eye, give yourself permission to not know. Because there's a ton of us out here that don't, and you're not alone. Second thing I would tell you though is almost going to sound contrary to that, but the truth is you need to take care of your transition by becoming the CEO of your transition. You need to be in charge of your transition. Your transition belongs to you, it belongs to no one else, it belongs to you and your family. And when CEOs are in charge of companies, they hire people around them to lift up them and lift up the organization to move it forward. They hire great CFOs, they hire great COOs, they hire great HR folks, they hire great people around them. And so what I would encourage all my brothers and sisters to do is to surround themselves with people and organizations that are going to lift them up and move them forward. But understand that not a single other person or a single organization needs to care more about your transition than you do. You have the most skin in the game. You have the most to lose. So you have to be in charge of it. You cannot expect people to come to you. You cannot expect people to give to you if you don't go get it. You've got to take a proactive and an active role. You got to take a proactive approach and an active role in what you're doing. So be the CEO of your transition, be in charge of it, surround yourself with great people, but recognize that you have to care more than anybody else.
Where can people find you if they have additional questions? And then tell me once again what the URL is for ACP.
Sure. ACP is at www.acp-usa.org. And we're also on LinkedIn. We've got, over 65,000 followers on LinkedIn. We've got a private group called ACP Connects, which is awesome. That's got just over 14,000 followers. That's the ACP Connects is where we have our corporate partners drop their job announcements and mentors get in there and drop nuggets and the staff gets in there and drops nuggets. And it's just kind of where we build community on LinkedIn. The ACP LinkedIn page, though, is where we have our webinars once or twice a week. We have great webinars that come on with one of our partnered companies. We just had Major League Baseball was on and did a great session about the organization, what it's like to be a veteran that works there and stuff like that. But if you want to find me personally, you can reach me on LinkedIn. That's where I hang out most. You can just look up Eric Brew. I'm the ugly old white bald guy with the beard hanging out. Lots of tattoos, but, cause I'm the quintessential infantry guy. Right. Yeah, man, find me on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people. I'm a big fan of, building, cultivating relationships. And, I just want, if there's anything I can do to help anyone out or add value, to what they're going through, or even if somebody just needs to hear again, that they're not alone, hit me up. I'm all about it.
Great. And then last, cause I'm not going to let you leave before you talk about it. You're also a podcaster.
I am. I'm a baby podcaster, though. Nah, I'm brand new.
No. It's like, oh, I'm a baby podcast. Whatever. Tell me about the podcast and where people can find it.
Yeah. So Vet SOS, just like you would experience, you'd see SOS at S.S.O.S., which ironically stands for sharing our stories, right? So Vet SOS hangs out and kind of exists to share our stories. We are about throwing a lifeline to people who may be just drowning in that sea of transition, right? So we don't want you to drown in that sea of transition. We want you to reach for the lifeline of Vet SOS. But we're out here to share our stories. We're on all major platforms. We always do a LinkedIn post that has our episodes on it. But again, yeah, I am. I really am a baby. Like, I've only done 5 episodes. This is season 2 for Vet SOS. They've been around for a year. They've got one full season under their belt. But Sean Welsh is a dear friend of mine. Him and his former partner did the first season, and then his partner needed to kind of step away from the hosting piece. He's still very much involved, and we love him dearly, but he needed to step away from the hosting piece. And so Sean asked me to step up and jump into season 2, and I'm looking forward to season 6 and 7 already, just because I'm having a blast. But this is about this podcast is just about reaching people, and I think that's what I love about this veteran community, right? Other podcasters like you guys, Vet SOS, and so many others, is that we and these organizations and these veteran advocates that are out here, we have an opportunity to stand shoulder to shoulder and advocate, and to show the rest of the world what it means to be a family and what it means to take care of each other.
Well, Eric, I want to say thank you for what you do. I mean, not only taking off the uniform, but making a career in helping transitioning service members and veterans and their family members. You're making an impact. You made an impact while in uniform, and the things you're doing will continue to have an impact and have a positive impact on the lives of everybody that goes through ACP and benefits from their services. And folks, check out Vet SOS. We're going to put everything that Eric said in the episode notes. So if you're Jack and Steel are going for a run, why not? Just let it ride. Give it a shot. Eric, thanks so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate you sharing some great information. I certainly hope some listeners are like queuing in and saying, you know what? I should look into that. Yes, you should. All of you should. I'm going to. It's a great service.
I love it. Man, listen, I am humbled. I'm genuinely honored to be here. Love you guys. And thanks for having me on, man. This was fun.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Eric. I'll be in touch.
Sounds good, man. I look forward to it.
And Eric has left the virtual studio. So check this out. Mm. And I checked with him. Fun fact.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks was a mentor on ACP, helping a transitioning service member that I think wanted to go into producing film. Tom Hanks. Like, it's almost like, who do I have in the lottery? You know, like what's the magic number that I'm going to get when I submit my application? I mean, how do they do it?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you even imagine? I don't even know what I would wear. Is that a video call? God, I hope it's not a video call.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do? Do they give you a heads up at that point? Jeez.
I don't know.
Get nervous wreck, sweating bullets.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. He mentioned that maybe you should become a mentor. You do a good job.
Yeah, we'll see. But then you got Tom Hanks and little old me.
What does he know? You got this.
Yeah, right. What does he know? Yeah. You know, just a guy in front of a
You work in HR, you work in Manhattan. You're not service member. You speak English. You speak it.
I speak people.
We speak acronyms and we don't even remember what they stand for.
I gave up asking the question of what an A4, G5, I don't even know what any of this stuff is. I just stopped.
A4, G5, okay.
Well, I don't know. I have no idea. I'll tell you later.
any saved rounds or final thoughts?
What he was talking about and the struggles that he was facing and even saying, you know, not even knowing what to even Google and the call that he made at that moment. The amount of self-awareness he had, even if he didn't know what he wanted, he knew that what he needed. And those are two very different things. And I think the self-awareness in that is really, really impeccable. And I really appreciate that about him. And then ACP, wow, what a great organization that is. And I can only imagine, I mean, how many people, that's one question I did want to ask, but you know, how many people have they helped up until now? I mean, this is crazy. It sounds like something that I wish I even had, you know, when we're trying to transition into a new career as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, 100%, I think we're lucky. I mean, I think it's almost, you know, it's handing over the most powerful informational interview on a platter.
Mm.
Like, why wouldn't you take that? Right. And in the process of filling out their application, it really makes you probably focus on, all right, because if you clearly you don't know what you want to do, you have no idea, use the process that they give you. And then they're going to take some experts and pair you up with the right person. And then if it doesn't work out, they're going to pair you up with no harm, no foul.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great service. It's a great service. And I'm really glad that we were able to have them come on and tell us about that. And Military One Source. I'm going to put all that stuff in the episode notes so that everybody, those of you, if you didn't, and you shouldn't, don't worry about writing stuff down in any of these podcast episodes. We're going to put it all in the episode notes. So you can click on the link. So with that, hey, we're wrapping it up here. It's another great episode, another great conversation, more great gouge about another great nonprofit organization helping transitioning service members. Thank you. very much for listening. I know it's almost like I'm letting these episodes creep a little bit longer and a little bit longer, but I hope you're digging it. And you know, if you skip through certain parts, that's fine too. But thank you very much for listening. And if you like what you heard, you can support our podcast by giving us, but you know what I'm going to ask for, if you listen to any other episodes, a 5-star review. I'm telling you, the data analytics, they kick our butt. Help us get ahead of the power curve. Give us a 5-star review so that we pop in search feeds a little bit easier for service members that are trying to find relevant transition information. You can also find New Mission Career Transition Podcast on not only the platform that you're using, but probably other platforms. Sometimes you might use Spotify. Sometimes you might use Apple. Am I on my iPhone or am I on my computer? Is the DoD system I'm on blocking Spotify? Guess what? They block Spotify. I just found that out. Hey, we're on all of them. And you can follow New Mission Career Transition Podcast on Instagram at New Mission CT. That's New Mission Charlie Tango. We would love to hear your feedback. You can DM us on Instagram or shoot us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Love to hear your feedback because we constantly want to make this process and the information that we provide you as good as we can make it. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.